The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, welcome to the fourth and last of these talks on fear. And before I launch into it, I wanted to say that I will, at the end of this 15-minute talk, that I'll stay here on YouTube in order to try to answer any questions that might come up on the chat following up from this week or anything. And yesterday I said I was going to be on Zoom, but I was mistaken. It's just easier to just stay here for now. And maybe next week. Tomorrow I won't be here, so this is the last day for this week, for this morning sittings. But next week we'll go through Friday, and maybe Friday we can have a community meeting on Zoom. So you have a chance to meet each other a little bit. We'll do the breakouts and also a chance to ask some questions. And we've done that a few times. So those of you who have been here, I think it was quite lovely to do it. Oh, no. Is there no sound? I see. So, I assume there's sound. Good. I see a sound. So here for the last talk about fear. And I have a peculiar mental habit or tendency to see things in words. And so when I hear or see the word fear, I notice that the word ear is in it. And so I have this idea of hearing. And this idea to be able to hear well what our fear is about, to take time to see it and get to know it, that when I see the word fear, it reminds me, okay, here's now I should listen deeply. What's happening here? And I like the idea of listening because it's not just feeling what's inside, but it's also listening to the mental chatter, the thoughts, the beliefs, the ideas, and also the imagery that we have that comes up. Because these words and stories and what we tell ourselves and the images we create of futures and ideas can have a huge impact on us. That I've certainly been minding my own business and feeling quite nice, and then had a particular kind of imagery or thought come up in my mind, and I could feel my body contract and react and be afraid, my stomach kind of tighten. But it directly connected to having this thought come up, this story come up or something. And so to listen deeply to our fear, to think of fear, now is the time to listen, now is the time to really connect here. And then to learn to be wise about it, to learn what is needed, what does our fear need from us? What do we need given that there's fear? But that begins, at least with people who practice mindfulness, by being present for it or recognizing it enough to begin becoming familiar with how fear works for us and how it operates in our own life, and to know how we need to care for it and take care of it. And there's a wide, wide range. I don't want to give the idea that all you need to do is to be mindful of it, and sometimes we need to actually do something different and distract ourselves. Sometimes what we need to do is dive down right in it and really allow the fear to grow and become quite strong in order to kind of the boil to pop or something, or to really see what's going on. And everything in between. But hopefully it's all done based on care, of love, of really wanting the best for ourselves. And what we don't need in relationship to fear is to be driven by it should be different, and to be driven by kind of a certain kind of anxiety around fear or hostility towards fear or some idea that we're not good enough if we're afraid or we have to be different in this way. Or there's all these ways in which we make it so much harder. And one of the goals of mindfulness practice is to learn how to have, I like to think of it as simple emotions. Just allow the simplicity of emotion to reveal itself to us. And what I mean by that, experience the emotion without a lot of the second arrows, the judgments, all this kind of complicated world that we have in relationship to it. And that's why earlier I talked about how important it is to notice our relationship to fear. Because if we can simplify that relationship, then sometimes we can just let fear exist in a very simple way. And there are times when fear can resolve itself. Fear has sometimes the wisdom or the healing, self-healing or self-liberating qualities, if we learn how to get out of its way and be very, very simple with it. Not always easy, and I don't say it's always can be done that way, to be simple, and so then other things are needed. But to learn how to be simpler and simpler and to listen more deeply to our fear is useful, because sometimes fear is healthy, it's wholesome. To live a life without any fear whatsoever is probably not a human life. If I'm walking along, a mountain trail, and the trail gets narrow and it's steep and drop on one side, there can be some very simple fear, tightening, concern, kind of a gathering together of attention and focus. Okay, now I have to pay attention, I have to be careful, and maybe I need to kind of stay away from the edge of the trail where it's such a big drop. And then when I come out where the trail opens up again, then that caution, that little bit of fear that was there, it's not needed anymore. But it was needed in order to make ourselves go well on this trail. All kinds of situations, fear is there to protect us and take care of us and do things for us. And fear can be our friend. It can also be our friend psychologically. It can also, for our inner life spiritually, and it doesn't have to be limiting. It's actually the opposite, that fear is what keeps us, in a certain kind of spiritual way, unlimited, free. And this is where the distinction between wholesome and unwholesome is so helpful, that we don't need to just think of fear as one particular thing. There's a range of what fear is, and the covering the wholesome and the unwholesome possibilities. And when we start having a sense of what's wholesome, what's nourishing, what's healthy, what's healing, what's really good within, then we can start feeling that there are forces within us that limit that, that contract that, that harm that, that takes that away from us. And those are the forces of greed, hatred, and delusion, the forces of what is unwholesome. And so we want to then protect ourselves from the unwholesome, not with more unwholesomeness. We have hatred, and then we don't want to protect ourselves from hatred by hating the hate. If we have greed, we don't want to kind of somehow get rid of the greed by greed for the wholesome. That's just more of the same. So this Aikido, this kind of wonderful movement of practice, is to learn how to meet what is unwholesome with what is wholesome. So if fear is unwholesome, and unwholesome is not supposed to be a moral judgment and the idea that it's bad, but it's just not helpful for us, it's not healthy, it's not healing, we want to kind of meet that with something that feels healing or healthy, or in strict Buddhist terms, meet what is not free with freedom. And it's possible to feel how some fear limits our freedom, limits our way of taking care of ourselves, limits protecting what's really good in us. Another kind of fear supports taking care of ourselves, supports keeping us from falling into what's unhealthy. And so the ability to listen to fear, to stop and look at it enough, to have enough simplicity about it, to really feel and know and really kind of get into the deeper and deeper, is to be able to tease apart and see where is it fear useful, what is good about it and what is not. And in a sense, all fear is useful in that it's a message to look deeper, to listen. What's going on here? We don't want to bat away or be unwelcoming to that part of ourselves which are difficult or unwholesome or that which keeps us entangled or caught. That deserves our kind, wholesome attention, just like anything else. And so this ability to begin having observation or mindfulness, awareness, that can take in everything, the wholesome and the unwholesome, that is a wholesome way of observing. It's a wholesome mindfulness. And that also we want to preserve. That also we want to protect. What a great gift it is to be able to look upon our full experience kind of through the eyes of freedom, the eyes of being awake, that doesn't condemn anything, doesn't shame anything, doesn't belittle ourselves because of what's going on, but rather holds it all in a generous, open, free way, without getting entangled, without getting pushed around by it. And so to learn to be free with fear, to learn to have fear not limit us, but learn the art of the helping, having supportive, helpful fear, do the opposite of limit us, keep us in worlds of freedom. And this is where fear can be a partner with confidence, as the kind of fear that undermines confidence begins to wane. And confidence in practice, confidence in our being alive, confidence that we can rest in our own dignity and value, then fear can be a partner to that confidence, where we are cautious around losing that. We're cautious about things that arise that want to convince us that we're less than that, convince us that we don't want to be that, or that we're supposed to be angry, or supposed to be greedy, or we're supposed to be somehow contracted. And to have the confidence to be here in the world, and one of the ways that's talked about in the tradition is to talk about being fearless. And that's a beautiful way to have the confidence of fearlessness. But I think we have to be kind of cautious that it's a fearlessness that doesn't still have fear operating. It's fearlessness where fear, the degree, supports the fearlessness, supports that confidence in a wise and good, powerful way. So I hope that this tender topic for this week, this topic which should be entered with a lot of care and respect, and certainly I don't want to give the sense, the idea that this is an easy topic to touch into and that it's supposed to be just kind of just do these simple words that I taught that as if it's like a straightforward thing to deal with fear. Fear is a profoundly deep and important part of our life that can be quite difficult to work with. And it's usually fear has been embedded in us very deeply for very significant reasons. And it should be deeply respected and cared for and loved and take our time. But it is possible to move into the wholesome and move into what is supportive for us and to do that and protect it and preserve it. And I hope that this these days on fear has supported your willingness to look at fear, anxiety, worry that you have, and to look at it from different perspectives and question it, and maybe it just helps you kind of become wiser, discover your own wisdom more for this very important human topic, fear. And finally, I'm convinced that if you spend time becoming wiser about your fear, you're not just doing it for yourself. Fear is very, very common in this world around us. And as we become wiser about our fear, it's actually a gift to everyone in many ways. And may this practice of yours be a support for the world. So I'm happy now to try to take some questions, and I will do my best with the questions. You know, I appreciate so much when I get the questions and have the feedback back and forth this way. But as we're waiting for questions, I want to say, because it takes a few moments for them to come from, you know, through the electricity to me. And I want to say that, I feel often sometimes I miss the intention of the questioner because I don't have the full context that I would have if we were in person. And so I just recognize. So does fear and delusion relate? Oh, it can be. We could think that things that are not worth to cling to hold on to value, ideas we have, beliefs we have, that we think things are true, are the things that trigger fear. So if I think that that what's most important for being a Dharma teacher is I should really have white shirts, only white clothes, because that's the traditional colors for upasakas, lay devotees of Buddhism, and I should really only wear white shirts. And now, you know, I'm really afraid that you're not going to like me as a teacher because I'm not wearing a white shirt. That's a kind of delusion, to be caught up in that kind of fear. So, there's lots of fears that are born from delusion. And that's why listening deeply, and sometimes if we can recognize that our fear is connected to a belief, a thought, an interpretation, then we can question it. And the idea of questioning, putting a little question mark behind our beliefs, is so helpful. And if the question mark's not quite the right idea for you, just add behind whatever belief or interpretation or commentary you have about things. Sometimes it's really wonderful to add three words. Is that so? Okay. So, can you explain further how fear keeps us spiritually free? If we have some feeling of being free, some feeling of no longer being entangled in greed, hate, and delusion, and we have an openness, a clarity to us, then along comes a thought that, for example, it could be as simple as driving down the road. I come out of my meditation, I have to go somewhere, I feel relaxed and open and peaceful, and I'm driving down the road, and I see in the distance there's a traffic light, and it's green. And I say, if I just kind of go a little bit faster than the speed limit, I might be able to cross it before it turns yellow. And I could feel myself contracting tight, getting focused on the light. I can even feel myself a little bit worried, looking around, are there any police there? And then if I feel all that movement, even if I can know that, oh, I want to go beat the light, I see that thought and I know from past experience my calm, my openness, my peace is going to be contracted and lost just because I want to go past the light quickly. Is that worth it? And I can have a kind of healthy feeling, no, that's actually dangerous for me. To start in that direction and build the momentum of contraction and wanting and getting, you know, speeding up and being efficient with my driving, it's actually what I want to protect and preserve is a sense of freedom and openness. That's worth protecting. And so there can be a very simple caution, very simple fear. Oh, not that. that's dangerous to start going that direction, to get involved in that. I hope that answers the question as some example. What can we do to enable people in our country to make political voting decisions not from a place of fear, but from wisdom and love? I think always we want to start with ourselves, to really get, it can take a long time to really explore the depths of our fear and really know it for ourselves inside and out. And then to offer yourself to the world around you in a way that they have nothing to fear from you, that you're able to talk with people, even with wildly different political views than you do, talk to them in an honest way and supportive way, not supportive exactly, but emotionally supportive way, so they have nothing to fear from you. And sometimes when people are with someone they don't fear, something relaxes and unfolds, and you can get deeper and deeper and find out what's going on for them in a deeper, deeper way. And then sometimes that's when the conversations and our common humanity and something useful can start happening, when both parties have really understood themselves more and more deeply. And it's a great question, but for now, that's the short answer. Please say more how fear supports fearlessness, confidence. Well, there is you feel what I'm trying to say today is, once we discover something good, healthy, worthwhile way of being inside, and the more we practice, the deeper we go, the more we discover there's a way of being in the world that's really beneficial, and that other ways that we've been living for years were actually harmful for us. They were just add a lot of stress to our life, always this stress, always this, something off about how we were with other people, with ourselves, all kinds of things. And then there can be a fear that comes up when we see the possibility that I might lose touch with that. Wow, I don't want to go back in that. That's not good. That's not safe for me to go back into that stressful world, to go back into the place where I lashed out in anger so easily. And so I'm afraid of doing that again. And so that fear tells us, oh, maybe I should stop. Maybe I should take a deeper look here. Let me go back and find that place of confidence. And if I can find that confidence, then maybe I could take care of life, or even go back to certain places in the world that I need to go to in an effective way. But I can't take care of things effectively if I go back to the stressful way that I was before. So something like that. Every time I calm my mind, I find that there's a lot of tension and anxiety in my stomach that doesn't go away. I think I try to avoid it in the day. How would you work with it? With this? Great. I've had that. When I first started the first years of meditation, I had a lot of tension in my stomach, and I would hold my belly tight and contracted. And what I made a habit of in meditation was maybe no more than three times in the course of a 40-minute meditation, I would relax my belly. And within a few seconds, it was contracted again. I didn't make it a project. I didn't tell myself I was wrong for having a tight belly. But those, at the beginning, the middle, some other time, I would relax it. And slowly, it just kind of began to dissipate. Eventually, I still had it when I started Vipassana practice. And what I learned from Vipassana practice was to really go into the fear, the tensions, the contractions. And I learned to kind of, whenever there was fear, I would drop my attention right into the heart of the fear, right into those muscles, for example, in the belly, and just be there and just breathe with it, hang with it. And I wouldn't be working with it. I wouldn't try so much to let go and relax anymore. But I would just be with it, hang out with it, until the tension in my body released itself or changed in some good way for itself. So we can do a little bit to relax, but in Vipassana, when it's appropriate, it's really good just go right into those contractions in the belly and hang with it as if you're going to be there forever with it. Don't make it a problem. Don't make it a project. Accompany it. Care for it. Our muscles are self-liberating. Our muscles know what to do to relax if we give them a chance. And then we do give them a chance through being present for it. What is the difference between fear and anxiety? How to deal with the latter, with anxiety? So that maybe the definition of these terms varies from person to person. The way I was defining fear for this week is fear is an umbrella term that covers a whole range of things within it. So anxiety is one kind of fear. But what characterizes anxiety generally has nothing to do with what's happening in the present moment. Generally, it's some kind of prediction of what's going to happen. And as a prediction, it belongs a little bit to the world of the imagination. And we imagine what's going to come. I'm anxious about people I'm going to meet because I imagine that all kinds of ways in which that meeting can go wrong. And so the imagination, and sometimes the more the imagination comes alive, the more anxiety there can be. And it can be a feedback loop. The more anxious we feel, the more that tends to promote anxious thinking or anxious prediction. And the more that we're predicting something terrible happening, the more the system feels anxious. And it can sometimes get into a panic attack around anxiety. So to learn to see when we're anxious, that there's a belief system, there's ideas, there's imaginations operating, sometimes can be helpful. And at some point, after many years of practice, I don't want to say this is easy, but one thing that really helped me was that, because I had a lot of anxiety when I was younger, was I'd be anxious about things that were going to happen later in the day, the next day, the next week, whatever. And after a long time of paying enough attention to what was going on, I noticed that my predictive abilities were really poor. Earlier I just thought my predictions were true. I didn't question them. I just thought, well, of course, you know, I was kind of living in the predictions, the imagination of what was going to happen. And it's kind of like, this is the truth, because I didn't know any different. It was so compelling, and so this is what reality is, kind of. But as I started seeing my mind more clearly and settled more, I realized after a while that most of the time I predicted it wrong. Sometimes the event was canceled, and that was a wasted anxiety because it didn't happen after all, or I came to the situation and the whole thing was different than I ever could have imagined. In so many different ways, my predictions were wrong. And after a while, when I saw that clearly, that helped me actually to just not believe them so much and not get so involved in imagining the future so much that I would be kind of sometimes, you know, pretty anxious. Can you comment on the difference of peeling back the layers of fear while sitting in meditation as opposed to dealing with fear outside of meditation, such as talking it through with friends? Oh, there definitely can be a difference, but I want to first say that they're both valuable. And if you don't have to choose one over the other, in the course of a day or a time, please do both. When we're talking about something like fear or our difficulties, it's addressing or looking at it from a different point of view than the experiential, just making room to experience it. Talking about something like fear, it's easy to be more problem solving. It's easy to be more analytical. It's also a nice place sometimes when it's not analytical or problem solving. Talking about a fear or emotion sometimes is a useful way to kind of give it expression. Sometimes it can come out of us and not be bottled up. And we can kind of almost like it shows itself more clearly in when we express it. And that can be really helpful. Sometimes we're talking with other people, we're getting feedback or a feedback loop that we hear ourselves say things that we would never have said in our, you know, privately to our own thinking mind. Sometimes our subconscious mind will kind of bubble over into the things we say and say, oh, that's what's going on. And I didn't know that. That sometimes it's not available so much if we're just sitting quietly by ourselves and doing our own thing. But on the other hand, sitting quietly in meditation allows for some deeper processing to unfold. We can drop down layers and layers of what goes on, reactivity, thoughts, beliefs, feelings. And sometimes we can just let go, and settle, until sometimes it's easier to come down to some of the more fundamental layers that are associated with fear. Also, meditation, the experiential side of meditation, which is not thinking about, not problem-solving about things, can allow the self-liberating or the self-healing or the processes of our inner life to unfold and move, evolve on their own. And this is one of the great gifts of meditation practice, is come to the point in meditation where we're comfortable and safe enough and open enough, strong enough with the mindfulness that we don't have to be the person in charge of our healing or the unfolding. There are powerful and very effective processes within us of resolving, of opening, of freeing, of healing, that if we can just get out of the way and really allow for, it gives us a very different feeling for our life than if we're always the one in charge, always the one kind of doing it. And sometimes if we're talking, it's a little bit talking from the point of view of the self, who's a little bit the agent. Meditation allows the agent to kind of take a rest and some deeper wellspring of goodness to kind of take care of things if we get out of the way. When strong fears arises, is there a technique that you could suggest to get centered? Thanks. That's a great question, and it's a very personal answer. People are so different from each other, and the fears and what's the impact of the great fear is so different from people that it's good to kind of learn a whole series of different things to know what's best for you and also to know what's best in different circumstances. Sometimes it might be really good if there's strong fear to find someone, a friend to talk with and go for a walk with and really talk it out and hear what's going on. Maybe you hear for yourself what you're thinking, and it's good. Sometimes if there's strong fear, you want to go and sometimes clearly do something that's an antidote. Find some place that's really safe. Find a person to be with that you feel really safe. Sometimes when there's really strong bottled up fear, something dramatic has happened and we're kind of like, it's good to move. It's good to kind of go and exercise or go for a walk someplace vigorously, or if you're kind of the kind of person who likes to do this, maybe pull the curtains in your home and turn on music and dance by yourself and just let them move. Let your body just move whatever way it wants, so the fear is not kind of held up or bottled up in the body. Because, fear sometimes when strong really wants to be kind of discharged almost and not be kind of stuck. Sometimes it's useful to do writing, journaling around fear. And an interesting exercise for journaling is to start with a sentence, I'm afraid of, and then write it, 50 times. And each time, see what different word, after a while, just don't have any inhibition, don't worry about what you write, don't worry about the grammar, don't worry if even it's true. The idea is just to let the expressivity just find its way on paper, but start with the words, I'm afraid of. And it might be fascinating to start seeing and all the different things that come up and all the layers and aspects of something that's related to the fear that you're feeling. And also, after a while, there's something about putting it on paper that can create a certain objectivity or disentanglement or some like feeling of, oh, that's what it is. There's fear. I'm here and fear is there, as opposed to I am afraid. I am the fear. It's kind of meditation, I hope, is helpful with fear. Certainly has been hugely important for me with my fear and anxiety that I had when early years of practice. Meditation probably did more for me in working through fear than almost anything else, partly because I just started to discover that some of the beliefs about myself and the world weren't really true, and that I discovered what was truer in the depths or the clarity or the peacefulness, the calm of meditation itself. And that began kind of breaking up the authority of the fear that I was living with. Can you give an example of fear being helpful for confidence? Oh, I think that was similar to a question I already gave. I can imagine maybe going to give a speech someplace, and I have confidence to give the speech in front of a group of people, I start thinking about a time I gave a speech and it didn't work out, and I made a big mistake or something, and I can feel myself sinking into, oh, poor Gil, and, you know, I don't know how to do this thing, and I don't, maybe I'll make a mistake again. And I could feel that, I better not lose this confidence. I'm about to give this talk. I better, you know, this is not the time to sink into this self-limiting kind of train of thoughts. And this is, you know, this is not good. I'm actually a little bit afraid that if I sink into that, I'm going to lose this healthy, relaxed, open kind of confidence that I'm showing up here with. So I'm going to let go of those thoughts. I'm not going to pick that up. I'm not going to look into it. I'm just going to kind of let that fall to the side so I can stay here with this. Another time, it might have been useful to look at what happened at the last time I gave a speech and I felt bad. And maybe it's useful to let it kind of the fear come up around that, what happened before. But not now, not for this purpose now. So then the fear protects me to stay confident. For a long time, I was trying to figure out how fear figures into the hindrances. The more I looked at it, it seemed that fear is what underlies and feeds all the hindrances. Your thoughts. This has, you know, that's a, if this is what you found for yourself, fantastic. One of the surprises of many people who practice is especially this happens on retreats, where all day long there's a heightened sense of attention to what's happening moment by moment in a way we often don't have in daily life. And it's not uncommon for people to come and say, wow, I had no idea how pervasive fear is for me. Fear, anxiety underlies everything, every thought, every action, every way that I walk and do and everything. I had no idea. And it can be a shock. It's actually very healthy to have that shock, to see what's going on, because it's part of that process of becoming free of anxiety or finding a very different way of being. So it's a kind of good news to see it, provided we don't get, you know, discouraged by that, but actually feel encouraged that, oh, this is good to see, because now there's a possibility of going beyond it. And so if that's your experience, great, look at it, good. The way I'm defining fear for this week, that it covers both the wholesome and unwholesome, that probably, you know, you can maybe look at that fear more from a little bit different perspective after this week to understand a little bit more of, you know, how is this unwholesome? What are the unhelpful qualities and aspects of this fear? And one of the things you might discover is that probably your fear is anxiety, rather than you know, certain kinds of fears that are more immediate than, you know, the cars barreling down at you at the street. There's a whole different physical, experiential way in which, you know, real fear, a helpful fear feels than things like anxiety. Can there be a manifestation of fear in the body, rapid heartbeat, without any fear or anxiety detected in the mind? Yeah, I'm not sure, but I believe that's the case. We're not always so conscious of what's going on for us. And so there can be deeper subconscious things that are going on. And this is why sometimes learning to be mindful and really being present for our bodily experience, sometimes we get physical sensations, symptoms of what's happening emotionally that we wouldn't have if we're just staying in our conscious thinking mind. We're kind of overriding what we're feeling or busy with other things I can well imagine that I know for myself that sometimes the first times I've recognized that I was afraid was not with some cognitive recognition, but noticing for me was my the tension in my belly. I say, oh, there's tension. Oh, yeah, I'm anxious. That's what's happening. So I can imagine that the racing heart can be that as well. We have to be a little bit cautious because there are medical reasons why the heart can race. And when the heart races, that is fear-producing. So I wouldn't necessarily say that the faster heartbeats is, rapid heartbeats is always from fear. Sometimes it's the other way around. So I'm always wondering about anxiety. For me, restlessness sounds more like how it feels. How is it related to fear? Or is restlessness also a kind of fear? I like that question. I don't know if I have necessarily an answer for that. I think that restlessness can often be accompanied by fear, can be caused by fear and anxiety. But I can imagine there's a kind of restlessness also with greed, kind of the, or even hatred, or any time there's a strong motivation and desire for something to do something, and it can't kind of be fulfilled, we can't act on it, that somehow the bottled energy kind of makes things more agitated and restless. So I can imagine that, but often I think it comes with fear. Restlessness go together with fear. So, it's a great question, sometimes I have to always remember that I think the wisest response sometimes is to appreciate how good the question is and then turn the mirror back on you. It's your job to bring your attention inwardly and really start use that question to help tease apart and see more clearly how it works for you. That's really where we discover what's going on. I don't want to, rather than learning how it's supposed to be, or we think it's supposed to be from someone else. So maybe one more, and then I feel like I need to stop here. Like fear, can grief also be either wholesome or unwholesome, depending? I think so. I believe that grief, as Charlie Brown says, there's good grief. I think that feelings of, you know, it depends. Again, remember that this is a little bit delicate because it's a little bit a question of semantics of how we define words. But I like the idea that, I mean, there is sadness that comes, feeling of loss that I think is a hugely normal, ordinary part of life that can be simple, can be just ordinary, can be even healthy, that's not a problem, that is part of our freedom. And my heart gets broken often. And I read the news or I talk to someone who is going through some huge difficulty or challenge or loss, and it's kind of heartbreaking. I certainly feel sad, I feel what I would be comfortable calling grief. And it feels wholesome, it feels healthy, it feels there's a rightness. I like the word rightness. There's a rightness to feeling. This is what life is like. And there are other times when grief is, there's a lot of attachment and clinging and shame and fear and expectations related to it that just makes it all gunked up and much more challenging. And I think part of the benefit of mindfulness practice and sitting with grief through mindfulness practice is to be able to kind of settle away the layers and layers of reactivity, commentary, second arrows, all kinds of other things that we have on top of grief, so that the simplicity of grief can operate. And I think if we can allow the simplicity of all emotions just to come, and even a grief, that then it unfolds the way it should. And it's best not to have ideas of what the should be. So I need to stop, and I very much appreciate these questions, and I hope that they were supportive of you and offered you a little bit something to look at your life and be more mindful of in a useful way. And I hope that you learn to be wise about your fear and wise about how to be fearless in such a way that we're really here to benefit self and others, the whole world. Thank you so much.